Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's politics podcast. It's now been confirmed that a nerve agent was used to murder Sergei Skripal, a former Russian spy who was found unconscious in Salisbury at the weekend. So how likely is it that the Kremlin was behind the attack, and how should the British government respond? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Tom Tugendhat, Chairman of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee and Tory MP. Now, Tom, you used to be a senior army officer. Nerve agents aren't exactly the type of weapon to fall into the hands of non-state actors, are they?
No, nerve agents are extremely difficult to manufacture and very hard to store without leakage and without, therefore, killing the person trying to store them. So very, very few organisations, even very few states have them because they're so hard to make. So this is definitely pointing towards a state actor or at least very close state collusion.
Now, this is rather difficult for the British government, though, because it's difficult to accuse Vladimir Putin of doing this if we don't have proof. And even after the Litvinenko murder, it took years for the official inquiry to come back and say that they believed that it probably was the Russians. Probably. That's as close as we can get after all of the years and after all of the evidence of Litvinenko. So do you think we'll ever be able to get any certainty over what happened to Sergei Skripal?
I think it's unlikely we'll ever have 100% proof, but I think what is likely is that this will build up towards a pattern where it makes any other answer extremely unlikely. And so as we start to see a former Russian intelligence officer who was spy-swapped back into the UK after he was arrested in Moscow. We see threats in 2010 made by the president, President Putin himself, on Russian television. We then see a modus operandi that looks remarkably similar to the murder of Litvinenko and the attempted murder of the Montenegrin prime minister and indeed others around Europe. We're beginning to see not only a very strong pattern, but a very strong centre to the pattern, and that centre appears very, very strongly to be the Kremlin.
Now, what I can't work out is if you wanted him dead, let's say that Putin would never have forgiven him for effectively defecting to the British, he could have had him killed in Russia, he could have kept him in jail. Why would you allow him to be spy-swapped in Britain and then have him killed in an incredibly conspicuous way? Because there would be lots of ways of killing somebody. To do it with a nerve agent is to send a marker, in the same way that killing Litvinenko with polonium 210 was a marker. So it doesn't. The motive seems to be rather vague, doesn't it?
Well, I'm not sure it is. I mean, the swap, of course, was in order to get back his intelligence assets in the United States. Anna Chapman was the most famous of that collection of sleeper agents who'd been in the United States for a number of years. But I think actually the marker is possibly part of the point, which is that President Putin, if indeed it is he who ordered it, is trying to make sure that those who betray him know that there is a cost to betrayal.
But he made that point in 2010 in a television interview. We've heard a lot of it today. Why now? Why wait 8 years to take this action?
Well, we've got an election coming up in Moscow, and we know that although he's almost certain to win, in fact, it would be astonishing if he didn't, he is not a young man, and he is aging. And all aging dictators have a problem, which is that as they age, people begin to think about the future. Young men with ambition and dreams start to wonder whether or not they could take his place, or indeed whether or not to organise their own organisation separate from his group. And so this is one way, possibly, of stating very clearly that disloyalty, however historic, will be punished, and will be punished very obviously, because let's not forget, it wasn't just Colonel Skripal who was murdered. It looks likely that his wife was murdered a year or so ago, his son was also murdered in 2017, and now his daughter too.
Right, but I can't quite see, if Putin was doing this as a virility symbol, to say, look what happens to my enemies, then surely there would be other ways of making this point, rather than having one with all the foreign policy ramifications that this opens up, if this was for a domestic audience. And also, isn't it just as likely that this was done by you know, a McMafia-style organization with links to elements of the Russian state. I mean, the Russian state is kind of fragmented. It's not, you got all sorts of strange people. And it might have been either somebody trying to frame Putin or perhaps a Thomas Becket moment when they heard him saying in 2010, I think traitors should get their 30 pieces of silver and their comeuppance. Perhaps somebody took it upon themselves to do this, because it isn't only the Kremlin that can get its hands on nerve agents. Aspects of the state, and in Russia they are quite closely linked to the mafia, could do it too.
Well, there is certainly in Russian military doctrine a concept of presumed intent, which is to interpret the desires of your commander even if your commander hasn't given the order. So that sort of Thomas Becket theory, as you put it, is certainly credible. The problem is that nerve agents really are not like other weapons. They are so lethal and so toxic that nobody would allow them into hands that they could not absolutely control. Because if those nerve agents were released, for example, on the Moscow Metro or the London Underground, you wouldn't be talking about two or three deaths. You'd be talking about hundreds, as we remember from the sarin attack in Tokyo a number of years ago. So these are a very different kind of weapon, and therefore the central control would be much, much greater. So I think that the possibility that it's detached, as you put it, from the state, I think is increasingly unlikely.
Now, we had the Foreign Secretary, first of all, suggest that the retaliation would come in the form of the World Cup. We might not send Prince William or a delegation. Doesn't this rather demonstrate that we're out of options here? I mean, if we were to respond by stopping some royals turning up into a Russian stadium, we'd be a laughingstock.
Well, I don't think that that's the extent of our capabilities. I think that working with others, and certainly working with the financial intelligence that we have here in the UK, there is actually quite a lot we can do. Because let's not forget what the Russian state really is, which is a kleptocratic organisation that has successfully stolen the assets of a country for the best part of 20 years. I mean, it's certainly alleged that President Putin himself has assets north of $300 billion stashed in various parts around the world. And indeed, when you look at his acolytes and friends, you can begin to see that he must be showing some largesse somehow. I mean, his cellist is one of the richest people in the world, and I don't think he got it from recording rights. So, you know, we can see that actually, if we really want to hit them, if we really want to hurt them for this kind of action, the correct way to do it is to work with others on asset freezes, things like the Magnitsky Act, which we introduced last year, but I think could go further, things like the criminal finance bill that is going through the Commons at the moment. There's actually quite a lot that we can do more. And you know what? We can also treat them like criminals, because quite a lot of these people are criminals, and we need to look at them as that. Now, if you were a crook in London and you turned up here outside the Spectator offices in a big Bentley with a massive fur coat, somebody would begin to ask you where you got the money from. And if the police came round and asked you that question, you couldn't give them a decent explanation, they would slap you with an unexplained wealth order and seize your assets. Now, why aren't we doing that with people who are coming here and opening suitcases of cash to pay for, well, everything from townhouses to Eton?
Right. So what you're saying is that we don't need to be certain that it was a Russian state, that in any way we can be a little less accommodating of people who come and go, who have the traits of being involved in organised crime, and we can make life a little bit more difficult for those who do seem to be Russian gangsters.
Well, let's be clear. This is a particularly awful incident, a nerve agent attack on the UK streets, which has now left a British policeman in hospital too, not just the two intended victims, but possibly others. It is pretty offensive in its own right. But actually, this comes as part of a pattern. You know, the cyber attacks on Estonia in 2007, the capturing of an Estonian border guard only a few years ago and putting him on trial in Moscow, the invasion of Ukraine by militias, the occupation of Georgia, the support of the Assad regime in murdering and gassing its own people. This is a pattern of behaviour that is simply unacceptable. And we, not only in the United Kingdom, but across the West, must be prepared to stand up to this.
But a lot of what you just mentioned was arm's length material. Like when the hacking takes place, the hacking is very difficult to trace. It's often done by agents. They could say, well, it might have come in Russia, but it's not the government. The Chinese government does the same. I mean, everybody knows that the Chinese government isn't involved in industrial league hacking of corporate interests in Britain and America, but it's very impossible to pin down. So this leaves us in the quandary, doesn't it? At some point we say, okay, we can't prove you did it. Well, we think you probably did. And that is not the best basis for making foreign policy responses.
Well, we're not dealing with a legal process here in a classic court of law. We're dealing with a balance of probabilities in order to keep our country safe. And actually, as the first duty of government is to protect the British people, I think seeing nerve agents used on British streets really does demand a response.
Tom Tugendhat, thanks very much indeed.
Why wait for tomorrow's papers? The best analysis of the day's news is already on Coffee House. To subscribe to the Evening Blend email in order to receive the best of The Spectator each day, just head to spectator.co.uk/blend.